I was allowed to stay home from school at lunchtime to watch JFK being sworn in. I remember the moment when he said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country." That was a profoundly important moment in my generation. I think there was a sense of purpose, a sense of idealism. By 1968, everything began to change. We watched the Vietnam War at home on our TV with Walter Cronkite, just like everybody else. And that 68 was an extraordinary turning point for this country. Those of us who protested the war did so because we loved our country, because we believed in the values and the ideals of this country, and because I think we believed in actively engaging with your country. You know, patriotism isn't just waving a flag at a parade. Patriotism is much deeper than that. Patriotism requires thinking and participating and really making a sense of sacrifice. I have no apology to make for those years. We stood up for what we believe in, and we stood up against the lies the government was telling us. I graduated from Oberlin in 1972. I was dating a pediatrician who had finished his training. He wanted to work abroad, and I thought, that would be great. You know, maybe we'll go to Europe, maybe we'll go to Africa, maybe we'll go to India. And I was home, and the phone rang at 2 a.m, and he was calling me from Morocco and said, "I have a job offer in Vietnam, do you want to go?" And I said, "Yes." And we left in August for 6 months, and I stayed for 2 years. And that Vietnam was where my life began. I went to Vietnam with all the answers, and I left after 2 years with an understanding of the questions. We in the anti-war movement, in any mass movement, things get reduced and into black and white, and it was American involvement is all wrong, the communists are all right. And when I got to Vietnam, I could appreciate the many shades of gray. I had close friends who were South Vietnamese. I lived and worked in Saigon, who hated the communists. My best friend in Vietnam, she was probably the one who helped me really appreciate the South Vietnamese side of the war. I was freelancing for Time magazine and also doing some work for Rolling Stone. And I was in the Time Bureau one night, very close to deadline, and my friend Dow walked in. And she was coming to say that things looked very bad, and she didn't know if they would survive. Her family had fled from the North in the early 50s. Her father was a civil servant. She had a brother in the South Vietnamese army. Her brother was missing. And she had a Honda. I got on the back of her Honda. We ride through the streets of Saigon to the Chinese part of town, and we're sitting with a fortune teller, and who told her that her brother was alive and he was making his way back to the family, which turned out to be true. He did survive. And I asked the fortune teller about what she thought was going to happen. And she was afraid that the communists were going to come to Saigon. And she said, "My husband and I have decided that we will poison ourselves and our 5 children. And I said to her, my friend translating, I said, "Is that because of your clairvoyance that you think this is going to happen?" And she said, "No." She said, "There are some events that overwhelm destiny." And that's how I think of Vietnam. I think it did overwhelm American destiny for a time. It did transform our sense of ourselves. I think it did transform how we view patriotism. At that point, I had written my first book, Shrapnel in the Heart. I traced people who left letters to the dead at the Vietnam Memorial. I had interviewed people whose children, brothers, sweethearts, husbands had been killed in the war. When I was doing the interviews for Shrapnel in the Heart, I heard the stories of those who went to war. I understood that for many, it was a chance to serve their country. Their fathers had been in the Second World War, and they thought they were going to that war, a war with meaning, and instead they found themselves in Vietnam. I learned about a mother whose only child is killed the week before Christmas and has never had another Christmas tree since. I learned about siblings who lost their brother in Vietnam and haven't talked about it for 30 years until they started talking to me. I interviewed William Westmoreland in 1989, the general who prosecuted the war for many of the years, during the big years of the war. And I asked, what was the hardest decision he made? He said it was to ask for the big upsurge in American troops when they brought the troop level up to 500,000. And I said, why was that so hard? He said, because I didn't think it would work. It was so disturbing to me to hear someone say, I didn't think it would work, but we went ahead and did it anyway. I mean, we know from the Westmoreland trial, we know from the Pentagon Papers, we know from Richard Nixon being elected with a secret plan to end the war, that they knew. They knew. And thousands of kids died for the lies of their government. That, to me, was unimaginable when I watched Kennedy be inaugurated. I've done a lot of reporting about the aftermath of war, and I have learned and deeply believe that wars don't end, they come home. And women and children often fight them. And it takes extraordinary courage to heal and to find meaning and purpose in life again, and to process the trauma of war. I'll read something I wrote in the introduction. Courage is the common thread that runs through these stories. Shrapnel in the Heart brought me quite literally to the doorsteps of the quietly courageous. I have always been struck by the savagery and randomness of the blows that lacerate some lives. I am in awe of the courage it takes to go on. Rarely do we notice the triumphs that are forged by putting one foot in front of the other one day at a time. Did we ever really notice that each bullet that took a life in Vietnam stopped several other lives here dead in their tracks? The flag on the coffin covered only the obvious tragedy. It wasn't just the bodies that were buried, it was the dreams.